Welcome to Change Hackers, providing daily insight and inspiration for people changing their world. I'm your host, Tony Cook, and I invite you to join me today in conversation with someone on the front line of driving change and transformation. My guest today is Jan van Betten, founder and CEO of Nudge, an Amsterdam-based social business which works to solve social and environmental issues by running leadership programs, consulting and campaigning, as well as distributing expertise across their online platform and through their grassroots community of over 60,000 individuals and 300 business partners. I spoke with Jan online from his office in Amsterdam. So Jan, welcome to Change Hackers.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, well, it's a pleasure. I've watched with interest the work you're doing at Nudge. The reason I wanted you on Change Hackers was because you've got such an interesting backstory in terms of how you got into what you're doing now. And we'll get into what you're doing now. Before we do, what I'd really like to do is sort of wind the clock back to your corporate career. Maybe go back a little bit further into that career just to explore, you know, when the first point was at which you recall feeling that having impact, aside from, you know, just doing well in business, was something that was important to you.
That's I think it goes way back to my childhood. It's probably my parents who taught me that, you know, making a difference is very important. And I've never been very active with that, but I had the good example of my parents who were always busy with that. But they died young, and I pursued a business career. And only, I think, later in my life, this idea of making a change, contributing to the world, came back to me. And in different ways, you know, by being in the school board, for instance, of the school of my children, mm-hmm. Where in a very busy business life, I spent quite some evenings and in discussing how this school with, you know, there was no single self-interest here, but just for the children of that school, mm-hmm. to make it a better school. And I was inspired by that. I realized that it gave me very good energy to do something completely different than making money, so to say.
So was that a case at the time of just an intrinsic citizenship within you, or was it a lack of the ability to be able to exercise that instinct through your work?
I think a bit of both, to be honest. When I was heading our German business, maybe some 10 years ago now, we were working on a new building, and for our offices. And it was about, can we do it against lower costs? And then, of course, you get into the energy saving discussions, and mm-hmm. that opened up a new window for me, because apparently all of a sudden there was also something like climate change. So I got interested through the topic of saving cost and saving energy in the mm-hmm. topic of climate change. And all of a sudden, you know, it was like something hit me in the face. And I thought, hey, it's amazing. Something is happening out there, and I've never seen it happening. I had a blind eye for it. And now all of a sudden I can see there's something much, much bigger going on than I would say making money and gaining market share. There's something that we need to do for the world. And that it really inspired me and gave me so, yeah. And of course, I was interested of seeing if I could combine this with my business.
So how did you channel that inspiration? I mean, did you go forensic and start finding out everything you could find out about climate change and about other related issues so you understood them better?
Yes, I think that's it. I all of a sudden, you know, there was a new window to the world, right. And I was very, very curious to find out everything I could see through that new window. So I started studying on every related subject. I started talking to people. I was asked to join a sort of think tank about the subject. Mm-hmm. And I really got sort of sucked in, if you want.
And at that stage, what were your attempts, how would you describe them, sort of within the workplace, trying to align, trying to integrate this thinking into commercial life?
Well, first, I realized that it was so new to our business to get this subject on the table.
Right.
So I
had... But you're in a position of power and authority at this stage. You know, you were running a country for the business.
Yes, true. But the funny thing is that, or the amazing thing, you know, we were in the business of making money. And if you then introduce a subject like, hey, but we have a responsibility as well, and we can do it better by, you know, taking care of the supply chain and everything, people start frowning and saying, "This are you? What happened to you? You know, is
I think you've gone soft."
Yes.
Yeah.
So that, of course, for me was also a sort of challenge on how to address these issues without losing my peers in this.
Mm. So how did you go about doing that? Because I guess at the time, the prevailing narrative around climate change and so on was very much sort of Armageddon. You know, it was a kind of doom and gloom, very pessimistic. It wasn't opportunity or solutions orientated at the time.
I was lucky enough to attend a presentation by one of the directors of the World Bank at that time. And this presentation was about, let's say, climate change and all the related issues. Peak oil, poverty, you know, a few of these World Bank issues. And I got his presentation and I just showed it to my team. And it was really doom and gloom, as you say. So at first they said, so what has this to do with us? And then I was able to make the relation to our business and to our social environment and to our geographical environment and say, hey, listen, if anyone can do something about this seriously, it's business. So it's us. We have the scope and we have the power and we have the leverage. So it's a huge opportunity as well. And I think that's the way that I sort of got them involved. But it didn't go fast enough for me. And I thought, well, in this line of business, I'm not going to make the difference. It got me powered up to eventually leave that business and set up my own business around the theme.
Had you expected that a year or two prior to that decision? You know, could you have anticipated that that was what you were going to do next?
Absolutely not.
you were on CEO track.
Yes, I was on the CEO track. But what, you know, what looking backwards, what I how I explain the story to people now is that I've been climbing, I would say, the CEO mountain, as I call it now, you know, the corporate mountain for the biggest part of my career. And it was a steep climb and it was an interesting climb. And I learned a lot on my way and I gained a lot of money on my way up. And then finally, when I reached the top, you could say, I realized that it was really, you know, a kind of a shock. Now I can laugh about it. But it was kind of a shock that all of a sudden I thought, I'm on the wrong mountain.
It's like the ladder leaning against the wrong wall kind of analogy.
Yes. I'm yeah. You know, the view is beautiful, but I can see where the right mountain for me is, but it's
right over there.
It's right up there, and I have to go down again, you know, across the valley, across the river, and climb up again. But not this time, the right mountain. But now, because now I could see where that mountain was.
How do you sell that kind of decision to yourself and to those around you? You know, family, those that, you know, rely on you for what you do. You know, who?
Well, you know, if I look at myself, I think I'm always been a little bit of a maverick. So people are
not surprised.
Not really surprised. You know, I've done a few crazy things in my life already, And so the people close to me know that I'm an entrepreneur and I'm always open to new things. So, and sometimes these new things can be surprising. You know, 10 years before this, I started my own internet business in the weekends, working hard for a year every weekend. And, you know, it was totally something different from what I was doing in my corporate life. And I sold it after a year. And so people were completely amazed that I was able to do something like that. So the people around me they know that I am a little bit of a crazy guy. So when I told people that I was going to, let's say, go down the mountain where I was and climb another one, of course, some people said, "You're completely crazy. Why don't you stay where you're comfortable and easy and everything? Why would you risk everything?" And I said, because it's stronger than me, you know, I have to do it.
So you felt compelled. That's really interesting. So, I mean, at what point did this become your problem to solve?
I think that I saw the issue, and there's a bit, important point here is when the Copenhagen Climate Summit went wrong. You know, it didn't work. It failed. And I thought, how is it possible that all these intelligent people with the right ranking and the right intentions and the right power, they come together in Copenhagen with, you know, the intention to solve the problem, and they can't solve it? There must be something wrong in the system. So I started thinking about it, and then I got convinced that it's, you cannot solve these kind of issues at a summit level. You have to also have a bottom-up approach. And that became a sort of conviction, maybe even a religious conviction, that I thought you have to do it bottom up as well, because otherwise it's not going to work. Society, there must be a sort of supporting layer in society.
Yeah.
When I realized that that was the case, and that it was my strong conviction that that was the case, I thought, so how could you do that? And then I started realizing that I gained all the, not all, but maybe a lot of insights through my career to set something up that could make a difference. I thought it should be run like a business. It is a startup. It should be financed in the proper way. There is, how to say it, you have to find alliances, partners. You have to know a lot about consumer behavior. You have to know a lot about data. You have to know a lot about social media. And all of a sudden, it appeared to me that I had gained a lot of this sort of knowledge. So I thought, well, eventually I could do something about it. And you have to look in the mirror and ask yourself, really? Or are you crazy? Or are you really this experienced in all these fields? And I thought, yeah, maybe I am. So, and when you see that, or you dare to say that to yourself, well, then, you know, the brakes are off the train, you know, it's going and it's moving, and you can't stop it anymore.
And then you become a servant to the idea.
Yeah.
So where did the idea come from? You touched on this sense of the importance of that insight from Copenhagen and the need for bottom up. As much as anything, I guess, to embolden the top down. You know, politicians will only go as far as, or be as radical as their electorate will allow them to.
Absolutely, yes.
So grassroots signals to the top are incredibly important. So there's a big distance between that kind of insight and translating it into an idea for a business and then operationalizing it. So how long did that process take to go through from this conviction that you could do something that made a contribution around the grassroots, that bottom-up kind of movement, and breathing life into it?
I think it's been a process of maybe 2 years. You know, you wake up at a certain morning and think, hey, this is a compelling idea to me. Hey, shouldn't I be doing something myself about this? Shouldn't I go down my old mountain and climb a new one? You know, that kind of thinking. Mm-hmm. That is the thinking you wake up with one morning. And from that point on, you start looking yourself in the mirror, talk to people again, take long, long hikes, in my case, in the woods of southern Germany, endless hikes, just trying to get your head around it. And as strange as it may sound, talk to the trees as well and look for answers. See if you're crazy or not. And finally, you know, you come to the...
And did they talk back?
Yes, they did.
What did they say?
It may sound like a very, very crazy idea, a very crazy thing, but there was a very interesting moment in this whole hiking in the woods. At a certain moment, you know, I found myself sort of lost in the forest, really lost. And it was by the end of the day. So dawn was over.
You were on your own.
I was on my own. I had half a liter of water left, and I had been walking for hours already, reflecting. And I found myself, you know, the dawn was setting in, and I had half a liter of water left, and I didn't have a clue where I was, and I didn't know how long it would take to get me out of that forest. Funny enough, it was completely secure, like a safe feeling. I wasn't panicking or anything. I just thought, what next? And then I find myself in an open spot in the forest, surrounded by a circle of trees. And the only thing I had, I realized the only thing I have is my half a bottle of water and these trees. So how am I going to find my way out? And I literally thought, let's ask the trees. And it's a crazy thing again. So I faced one tree and asked that tree, is this the right direction? And I didn't feel anything coming back. So I turned around and talked, if you want, to every tree around me. And all of a sudden, there was one moment that I thought, well, this sounds good. There is a certain energy here, like pointing me in the right direction. So yes, I really sensed that I had a sort of connection with that certain tree. How strange it may sound. So I thought, well, apparently, let's give it a try. Apparently, this is the right direction. So I walked past that tree into the forest again in that direction and kept on going straight ahead and found a path that eventually led me out of the forest.
That's an extraordinary story. I mean, there will be people listening who absolutely get that. And there'll be others that absolutely don't.
This guy is crazy. I know.
Maybe because they've not opened themselves up to that kind of thing.
The thing is, you know, if you have nothing else than to listen to a few trees, why wouldn't you listen to the trees? You know, they are your only advisor at that moment. And it may sound crazy, but I don't know. I really don't know. But and maybe I am crazy. Who will know? And I don't care. I mean, it helped and it worked and I got myself out of the forest. So it's a beautiful story in the end.
It all worked out well. I mean, but it's such a metaphor, isn't it? Powerful metaphor for, you know, we all find ourselves in those kind of situations where you're lost. The option to stay where you are is not an option either. And, you know, you have to take a leap of faith, even though you might not understand why. It could be instinct, you know, an energy, as you described it, but something makes you act and pursue it.
No, but it gave me the confidence, I think, that I needed at that moment to go in that direction. And maybe, you know, it was just me that I don't know, you know, I will never know. But the thing is, it gave me the confidence and the trust to go ahead, find myself a way out of that forest. And I found it. So, yeah, it worked for me.
Did you learn something broader about yourself from that experience?
Well, what I learned, and I had more of the same experiences later on in my life, let's say after that one. So one, I learned to trust nature, in fact. And I, when I'm really lost now and don't know what to do, which happens from time to time, I will seek nature and go into nature and into the wild if possible. And I always find, let's say, the answers maybe in myself, surrounded by that nature. I don't know. But for me, it helps. So that's something I learned. And something else I've learned is that, you know, how desperate the situation may look, keep up the good, keep up your trust and listen. Just use what there is at that moment.
So this is really interesting, this relationship with nature, first of all, but also the taking time out to undertake deep reflection, I guess, and a lot of soul searching, but quieten your mind.
Yes.
You know, and withdraw from all the day-to-day noise.
Yes.
And distractions that prevent you from being clear on things.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely true. Yeah.
And so many people don't take that time, even if it's just, you know, for a few minutes or an hour a day.
Mm. Yeah, the thing is, for me, it doesn't work for a few minutes or an hour. I need to really, really get out there submerged in nature, and preferably in the wilderness. That is for me what works.
And that makes total sense now, knowing what you now do. You know, having heard you announce the prize for the Nudge Global Challenge winners to go on a walk with the Maasai.
Yes,
this is where this comes from, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Has touched you personally.
Yes,
you've seen the benefit of it, and you want to share that with others.
Well, I can tell you that the first time we did this, we went to the North Pole. I wanted to take these people to the true wilderness, where there's nothing, and I wanted to give them, you know, that experience, a life-changing experience. And I think life-changing experience happen in nature, in wilderness, in nothing. So I think it was one of the most beautiful moments in my life as well. So that's another thing, you know, if you would have asked me 10 years ago, if I would have, you know, will you find yourself on the North Pole, or will you find yourself in the midst of an Amazon forest, or walking with the Maasai, I would have said, no, of course not. Not possible.
Just think what we could achieve together if more people intentionally took those kind of trips.
Yeah.
The impact on the individual is profound, but the impact collectively, could it be even more profound?
I think so, yes.
It creates a connection, an emotional connection to nature, to the planet, that can't be undone once it's there. So coming back to the more, I wouldn't say the mundane, but the kind of the more day-to-day, it's nothing's mundane in your life. Yeah. But yeah, just to complete the story, to bring us up to where we are now and where you're heading, we left the story off on Nudge, where you sort of breathed life into it. You developed the model, and you got this very strong sense, but you then had to go about turning it into reality. And you know, how much clarity you had around the culture of the organization, what kind of people you wanted working in it, and what kind of activities you imagined you were going to be doing.
Well, first of all, I spent, I think, about 6 months of really preparing, making plans, designing the business models, trying to convince potential shareholders, et cetera, talking to future customers and all these things, because I didn't really know what how it was going to look like. So I thought, let's first just talk to people with the big idea and see what comes back. And I took all the feedback into a more concrete plan and then presented it again to the same people. And they got enthusiastic about it. I could start renting an office and hiring the first people. I don't think I've given the culture so much thought. I've given the business plan a lot of thought. And then so that we could start. And from there, everything went different than we planned. Everything. Nothing went as planned.
No business plan survives first customer contact, as they say. I was struck when I first came to see you in Amsterdam. You were talking about the genesis of the Global Challenge, which for listeners is a competition, first off, to select young people working in large organizations primarily, but also alongside social entrepreneurs, to work together for a number of months and then for a boot camp over a few days to develop ideas, which they then go back and operationalize to have impact in their businesses.
But this whole program was never intended to be. It was not in my early business plans. It came up because someone asked me if we could design such a program, but it was not in the original business plans about Nudge. And what this learned me as well is that you have to try to follow the energy. It's the same with that bloody tree, you know. Can you feel where the energy is? Because probably that's where it's going. And the same is with you know, what happened to Thailand just now. Apparently there is some energy in Bangkok. So we're following the energy and see what comes out of it.
So just explain to listeners what's happened there.
Well, you know, I run a little business in the Netherlands, and we're doing it. It's running sort of okay in the Netherlands. And in the Netherlands, we designed this global program for young people all around the world. And all of a sudden, I get a phone call from the government of Thailand, telling me that they are designing a bottom-up approach for the future of Thailand. You know, involving people of Thailand in designing the future. And they said, well, you are apparently doing something like that in the Netherlands. Would you be so kind to come over to Bangkok and tell us how you do it and be a keynote speaker at our launching event? So I was totally surprised because they've been following Nudge apparently for 2 or 3 years now. And I never had a clue. So I was invited and welcomed as you know the messiahs. I don't know, it was completely crazy.
You need to go back over your web stats and just look for those outliers. They're kind of six hits a month coming from Thailand.
Yeah, but if you go over the web stats, you see, you know, an incidental visitor from Thailand, from every place in the world. And you don't spend much time on that because
you didn't realize it was the Minister for Finance or Economic Development.
Effectively, it was the Minister of Science and Technology.
Wow.
Minister of Science and Technology, who has been following us. Yeah.
So never discount one hit.
No,
because it can lead to a keen.
So yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? So. And that's also, you know, it's where the energy is, but apparently it's also where the fun is. So we are trying to set up, you know, from our global impact challenge, we're now trying to set up local impact challenges. And we just follow the energy. So see where people are interested in working with us. We'll go there. There's no big plan. We should go to the States because there's the most people or whatever, or the money is there. We haven't done that so far.
What you have now is you've got a model that you've been testing and refining over 5 or 6 years. Mm. Is there a moonshot? Is there something you're going after over the next 2 or 3?
Well, funny enough, what happened in Bangkok, that I woke up one morning again and thought, so this is a thought, you know, it's a spark. It came into my head one morning. I woke up with it. And so I'll give this spark a lot of thought over the next coming weeks or month. And the idea is that we now have a website which is in Dutch. And so therefore it's Holland only, if you want. And my idea was, what would happen if we just change the language of our website to English? What would happen? And we just open it up for the world. And of course, normally you would say, it's going to bring you a lot of distraction and loss of focus and everything, but it came in as a huge sparkle, and I'm really going to give it some thought because this could be a tree I'm listening to, you know. Maybe we'll just do it in English and see what happens, and we'll open up for the world. I think it's a very powerful idea. It's a very powerful thought. I can see every bear on the road.
But at the moment, I'm not so afraid of all these bears.
What a great place to leave it. Jan, thanks so much for joining us.
You're so welcome. Thank you so much.
I'm your host, Tony Cook, and I'm on a mission to provide inspiration and insight for people changing their world. So check out changehackers.org to read show notes, guest blogs, and subscribe to access bonus content. Remember, this show's for you and change hackers like you. So drop me a line, tell me what you love, what you hate, or ideas you have for improving the show. And let me know if you know someone who'd make a great guest on this show. Maybe a friend, someone you work with, maybe even you. Just use the contact form at changehackers.org. I'd love to hear from you. Till next time, change hackers.